ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
From Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 3, Text 25, Chapter entitled Gajendra's Prayers of Surrender.
Jijivise naham iha amoyakim antar bahis chavritya bhyayo naya इच्छामि कलेन न यस्य विप्लवस् तस्यात्मा लोका वरण्यस्य मोक्षम्।
Translation proper by Srila Prabhupada. I did not wish to live anymore after I am released from the attack of the crocodile. What is the use of an elephant's body covered externally and internally by ignorance? I simply desire eternal liberation from the covering of ignorance. That covering is not destroyed by the influence of time. Purport. In this material world, every living entity is covered by the darkness of ignorance. Therefore, the Vedas enjoin that one should approach the Supreme Lord through the spiritual master, who is described and offered prayers in the Gautamiya Tantra as follows. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto my spiritual master, who with the torchlight of knowledge has opened my eyes, which are blinded by the darkness of ignorance. Although one may struggle for existence in this material world, to live forever is impossible. One must understand, however, that this struggle for existence is due to ignorance, for otherwise every living being is an eternal part of the Supreme Lord. There is no need to live as an elephant or a man, American or Indian. One should desire only to achieve liberation from the cycle of birth and death. Because of ignorance, we consider every living life offered by nature to be happy and pleasing. But in the degraded life within this material world, from the life of Brahma down to the end of that of an insect, ant, no one can actually be happy. We are making plans, making so many plans to live happily, but there cannot be any happiness in this material world, however we may try to make a permanent settlement in this life or that. It's a very beautiful sloka, because even through our otherwise dull intelligence, we can perceive a very strong emotion emanating from Gajendra's heart. We can feel, even through the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam, the intense emotions upsurging from the grief-stricken situation of Gajendra. We can feel the anguish of his heart. We can see his trying, we see his eyes wetted with tears. We can see the bleeding foot. We can feel his pain. And in that desperate situation of life, when he is feeling that he will die now, he is going to bleed to death, in that utter state of desperation and helplessness, this cannot be anything else but the most heartfelt prayers of anybody in this world. It has to be coming from the core of your heart, the very core of your very existence, uncovered by any falsity or vanity or pride. Cannot be. It's not possible. So, we can see Gajendra in that knell, death trap. These are some of his last prayers now. We began, he's offered about at least 24 prayers before this. And there are a few more prayers which are recorded in the Bhagavatam. And it is this situation, it is this sort of prayer, probably this specific one, I don't know, which actually must have made the Lord really actually embark on his, you know, Garuda's back to come and release him. It is very typical. This prayer is so powerful. One can think of similar parallels of within our limited knowledge of the Holy Scriptures, that Krishna is very responsive. Krishna is basically a very responsive person. But he gives himself only when this emotion emanates from the heart. He responds when we are offering our casual prayers as well, of course. It is not possible to be so desperate all the time. And we can't live in this world like that. And we just, every time you come in front of Gopinath and have a Shingar Arati every day and you suppose Krishna. it's not possible to be artificial like that. Because in the AC hall and nice chandeliers and, you know, everything is wonderful and you sing beautiful Lord Krishna and nice peacock feather and, you know, all the nice loving devotees around you. Nobody is catching your foot and nobody is stabbing from the back. Nobody is doing anything to you. You know, so our prayers are going to be quite casual. My dear Lord, please bless me that I can serve you, you know, like that. And all of us do pray like that. And that's nice. And the Lord, of course, being responsive, receives those prayers in a casual way also. Because they're quite casually offered. Yathama prapadyanti principle applies. So they're recorded, yeah. He's a nice devotee offering good prayers. But we can see Krishna does not give himself. Krishna is a very intense person. Like we find sometimes, he's a very intense person. Like we say, Radhanath Swami Maharaj, very intense person. There are some people are there who are by nature very intense in whatever they do. They're very intense people. And I guess their intense personality comes from Krishna, because Krishna himself is an intense person. Whatever he does, he does with full absorption, full intensity. So unless he gets some intense sort of call, desperate call, he does not really give himself. So we can see parallels of, we can only think of, the best example is Draupadi, of course. This is the classic example. There cannot be anything better than that. That here is physical pain, and there was intense, unbelievable emotional pain. Different types of pain, of course, but pain is pain, and emotional pain can, of course, be more severe than physical. But in any case, Arjendra is a person whom we always quote as an example of a person among the four categories, Artho, Artha, Arthi, Jigyasu, Jnani, Jabhartar, Sabha. So, in the Artha category, this is the climax. This is the best. This is the highest. The most painful experience of desperate, imminent death and annihilation, dissolution of your very existence. And therefore, this finds its place in the Bhagavatam, because Draupadi also was like that. And what is the nature, what is the content of the prayer? The content of the prayer is not for release from pain. That is the beauty of this prayer. And so many people pray to the Lord, is it not? I mean, that prayer to the Lord is quite natural. Even in atheist prayers, is it not? We say there are no, like I heard many years back Maharaj say that, there are no atheists in foxholes. It was explained that when you fight a war, now we don't know what is going to a war. We don't know what it means. We can only read them, or at the most sometimes see some video clippings. You know, zoom, zoom, you know, people are being fired and there's cannons and tanks and, you know, Scud missiles. We have seen those, you know, in the Iran-Iraq war. The Scud missiles were firing, all various things. So if you're on that front,
and you can see all things are happening in front of you, then you know you cannot be just, you know, walking like in a garden. You're going to be so scared of your life. So it's called the foxhole. You know, they have to hide in that and just come out for a split second and shoot and again go inside and come outside and shoot again, you come inside. So if you're in that foxhole, then you're not going to be an atheist. Because, you know, the next bullet aimed at you or the stray bullet could just be, you know, severing your body into pieces. So they cannot be atheist over there. Or they say, you know, in that, those scientists who are up in the sky, you know, that Apollo 14 or whatever that expedition was, and then this huge, nice spaceship built the best of technology of that time, and then the technology fails as expected, Titanic and all these things, you know, it's nothing really works. So then when there was a fire on this spaceship, so they were praying to Earth, to the basement, to their control chambers, that please ask everybody in the world to pray for us. We are in a blazing samsara dava in the middle of middle of space. You know, there is we don't know what happens to us. So, you know, they cannot. So there are no really actually atheists. It is just that they are not going through the situation of Gajendra. So they cannot be really atheists, because the child has to cry for mother and father. That is a natural biological emotional response. And when the child is hit, the child falls. He says, "I, mummy." It's just natural. It, you know, it is not a plan. It is a reflex. It's just a reflex which has been implanted. Is implanted at the time of creation into a living being, that when he falls to the ground or hurts himself or in his desperate, he remembers his mother and father. Because they are his natural caretakers. Similarly, it is just so natural for us to go to our father and mother, Radha and Krishna. When Bhumi Devi is overburdened by those powerful demons, the Krishna book begins with that line practically. When the earth was overburdened many years ago, it begins like that, long, long ago when the earth was overburdened. And what did she do? She never kept on crying. She went to her father, Lord Brahma. Brahma is the father of all living beings. So it is just natural, even if you are a person as great as Bhumi Devi, who can bear the earth off you, the whole, and everyone else on this world is your child. Everyone is born from you, from your womb. All the trees, all the reptiles, and all the, you know, everyone is born from your womb. But that mother herself, when she is overburdened by some horrible activity being performed upon her, then she goes to her father, Lord Brahma. So we can see that it is just the way we are, and just naturally so and beautifully so, in fact, that we have to go to our superior caretaker, mother and father. So, Gajendra also, of course, he is in a situation where he is approaching his mother and father. He doesn't really know, of course. Here, it's like, you know, in medical science, we have a disorder called as nominal aphasia. Where aphasia means you can see the object, but you don't know what it is, actually. You just look at the thing, you know what it is. You know it's a lid of a glass, but, you know, you really don't know it's a, you cannot say lid. You can't say this is a pen, and you know you're supposed to write with it, but you're struggling to find out what, you know, you don't know the name of that. So it's a medical disease called as nominal aphasia. You can't name that object. So here is something like that on the spiritual side. You know, he's praying to the Supreme Lord, but he doesn't know his name. He just doesn't know his name. It's Krishna or Rama or Narsingha. He doesn't really, not just except for the name, everything is there. So it's a complete prayer. It's not that because the name is not there, because everything else is being said. Like, you know, if there is a pen, it's long, it's sleek, it's a refill, you know, you can write with it and, you know, you can put it in your pocket, but you cannot just say the word pen, that's all. So he's saying everything about the Lord except without saying his name. So when it is being said about the Lord, you know, obviously he recognizes it's about me. I'm being described here. So you can see in the next few prayers it will come. You know, the demigod says, this is not about me. He's not calling me. He's not calling you? No, he's not calling me also. He must be calling Krishna. So Krishna immediately understands that, you know, I am being called here, and so there's no confusion as to who is that one who is supreme, supreme, supreme. He's saying it is Krishna. Just the name is lacking. So the content of the prayer is very, very beautiful. He is not asking for liberation from pain. Many people pray. They may pray, of course, to a demigod or demigoddess or to Krishna or whomsoever they feel sheltered by. But almost always, our prayer is for freedom from pain, is it not? We always go for freedom from pain. Or even if you pray to a doctor, please, you know, a simple IV line, doctor, please remove this, you know. You have 4 or 5 IV lines in your body, and in each and you know, sometimes the veins are very thin and the pain, and the patient gets all right from his disease and goes home, but he goes with a lot of pain with all of 4 or 5 IV lines, you know, sticking all around his intravenous lines. So sometimes doctors, patients come and say, doctor, please, now I want to get admitted, but no intravenous. I don't want any IV. So, and the point is that we go to and pray, whatever, but we pray only for freedom from pain. And that's what makes the prayer material. But here we can see this is, if it was that type of prayer, it won't find its place in the Bhagavatam. But everyone is praying for the same thing. Every cancer patient with pain is praying to the doctor, please free me from this pain, you know, give me morphine, give me, you know, fortine, whatever, give me some painkiller and I'll just again get rid of this pain. But here is not that. Here Gajendra is very clearly mentioning that I do not wish to live. Even if I am released from the attack of this, so even if I get free from this pain, I have no desire to live and enjoy again being the king of the elephant community, being the, you know, king of Trikuta mountain filled with gold and silver and jubies and raphires, all that his description is there. He was a king of all that. So I don't want to go back to that. He has tasted the futility of material existence. That is a key to, you know, the Gajendra's prayers. He has actually tasted the bitter fruit of the futility of material existence. And he is in a complete state of what I can call as material exhaustion. He has exhausted his desire to live. Like when you walk, suppose you have a long walk, you just walk, keep walking. At a point, it's like, just can't walk. It's just impossible to walk anymore. My legs are finished. I'm jammed. They become like pillars now. I can't move them. So you are completely physically exhausted. In one more step is impossible. So Gajendra leads that stage. That stage of being in a state where he just doesn't want to live. He's materially exhausted. He has seen it all. He has done it all. He's enjoyed it all. Everything is finished. Everything is done with. And I said, no more now. I don't want to go back to that. Because he understands that all that pleasure was an illusion. All the pleasure was simply a nice illusion. So now he's praying to be free from ignorance. He's asking for moksha. And what is his prayer for moksha? I want to be free from ignorance. And he knows that the moment I get another body, another spell of another sojourn of ignorance. It is this body which is the source of ignorance. Therefore, Prabhupada says that from the ant to Brahma, even Brahma also, relative to the ant, of course, much less, but in Brahma also is in state of ignorance. But the moment you get a body, a material body, matter is by nature designed to cover. What is matter? Matter is basically something that the Lord has created. And every matter, whether, you know, of course, Pancha Mahabhut, but, you know, in all its finities and all its varieties, all varieties of matter is designed only for one purpose, to cover. It's only meant for covering, that's all. Therefore, it is called as the Avaranatmika Shakti. It is just designed for cover. And spiritual energy by nature is for revelation. Spiritual energy is always Swayam Prakash, is always self-illuminating. So, unless you meet a person who comes from the realm of Swayam Prakash, you will always be in a state of perpetual ignorance. Therefore, this beautiful slok from Gautama Tantra, which we chant every day, everything we say, everything before we start any talk on spirituality, we just cannot do that unless we have said this beautiful prayer, which where the speaker and the audience, all of everybody involved, just accepts prima facie the fact that we are all born in a gross state of ignorance. And that this person, because of his connection with the spiritual master or the spiritual one himself, because the speaker is connected, the audience is connected to those people who have not come from the world of matter. Masiha, prophet, these nice words we say. What is a Masiha? What is a prophet?
These are people who have come from the spiritual sky. They have not come from matter. They are not born of matter. They are born of spirit from the Lord, from the Lord's own spiritual entourage. So it is Jesus, or it is, you know, a great saint like, you know, Madhvacharya, and all these great souls, His divine grace. All of them, they have come from that realm of Swayam Prakash, where everything is illuminated. Everything is, nothing is covered. In the spiritual world, nothing is covered. Why nothing is covered? Because there is no matter. Everything is revealed. Everything is revealed. Krishna's nature is revealed. The nature of the spiritual, everything is revealed. There is no just covering of ignorance whatsoever. Everyone knows His nature, Krishna's nature. Nature of everything is just revealed. So, Gajendra, having realized that the moment I get another body, I'm going to get covered by another lifetime of ignorance. So he said, I don't want another body. That's it. And Prabhupada goes further, said, what do you talk of living in an elephant body? Said, I don't want even a man's body. We may think that, you know, man's body is better than elephant, isn't it? Prabhupada has to clarify. So, you know, he said, no. And I want to talk of what to talk of an American body. Wow. That's superior to Indian or African bodies, because they're fair and this and that, and they look a little better externally. Prabhupada says, Indian body be nai, American body be nai. Both bodies. I don't want any of these bodies. He didn't say African, because nobody wants African body usually. It's dark. But you know, you may think, oh, Indian body, in India is a very pious land, you know, so it's nice to be born in India. America, of course, is a land of wealth, so it's nice to be born there also. Body nahi chahiye. No more bodies. So, you know, this is what we have to really actually prepare for. If we want Krishna, then we will have to reach, either understand ourselves that this is the situation around us, or if you don't understand what is around, going actually ground around us is pretty bad. I was thinking yesterday night, as I was just browsing through the paper, there's a small heading, Japan. Dolphin slaughter makes the sea red. Now this struck me very badly. I was really, it made me actually emotionally disturbed. There are so many thousands upon tens of thousands of dolphins being slaughtered in this world today. And imagine the sea became red. It's not anymore water, it's only blood. So I was thinking that just like we have a per capita income, we calculate, and these people, economists, what is in every country, Switzerland, very high, Japan, very high, you know, America, Germany, you know, India, somewhere, you know, lower down. What is the per capita sinful activity of every person? How much sin is every person performing in this world in Kali Yuga? How much karmic capita is there per human being? The animals are not sinful. They have no karma in one sense. They're just going through some such of, you know, karmic reaction, but they're not performing some, you know, fresh sinful reactions. And they're just being programmed, you know, to bark and to eat and to lick the plate and, you know, just to have sex and just live a life, you know, as per biological programming. But it's this rascal species called as human being. He's such a rascal that he just performs. And in Kali Yuga, of course, it is just nothing else but the sin. Every human being, how much sin he is performing. Prabhupada actually, when we say, Prabhupada says, only two types of people in this world, you know, asuras and suras. We find this very, sometimes I used to find in the beginning of my ISKCON days, this is very, how can you say everyone else, you know, who's not a devotee is a rascal and he's an asura. You think everyone is asura? So I should start feeling my father is asura, mother is asura. You know, my neighbor is asura, and my teacher is asura, my college professor, everyone is asuras, all asuras. So I should start feeling very strongly about them, you know, so they're all bad people. You know, so, but then, you know, that was an immature, thing. But, you know, as you grow a little bit, you know, understand that actually, you know, asura is not just that, but asura is actually a person who is really living only for sense gratification. That's an asura.
So, you know, whether it's killing a dolphin, you know, I saw this picture on the internet, they kill a dolphin, you know, huge amount of blood gushes out, you know, huge amount of blood, it's like buckets and buckets of blood gushing out from his throat. Huh? How can somebody do that? You know, what kind of a heart that person must have been having, that he can just, you know, feel enjoyment in somebody's throat being, you know, snipped. And just one or two of them, just thousands of people with thousands of dolphins around them, and everything around them is red and bloody. There are people who are soft-hearted, they cannot see a drop of blood. When I was, you know, just in 12th standard, my uncle underwent, ear operation. And he was being operated through a microscope. You know, because ears are very tiny, microscope to operate. So it's a microscope, and in the microscope there was a drop of blood. He had bled in his ears during surgery. I saw through that, and I started getting giddiness. That time I was not a medical student, so luckily that was all right. But then after that, we have seen so much of blood ourselves, and you know, just surgery and this and that, and people come injured, roadside accidents, and we've seen a lot of blood. But not this type of blood. People are there who can just see blood. It's, it's too much for them to just little blood and feel. That's a soft heart. That's a good heart. It's a genuine good heart. But there are completely heartless people who can kill animals and cut trees, and trees don't bleed. But you know, just somebody just comes and chops a tree. If we just go through the sawmills, you know, the sawmills are there all around in the city. You find huge logs of trees, you know. It must have taken years and years and years for those trees to grow. Slowly, gradually, for the trunk to be so large, like almost like, you know, 3 feet and 3 meters in diameter. And it takes, you know, 30 seconds to just chop it with a saw. What about the tree going through? Somebody just chopping you like this across the abdomen. And you just can't do anything about it. You're just standing there and somebody's cutting your abdomen and just seeing it. And just finished. It's gone. So the per capita sinful activity of this world is very, very high. So we don't realize, you know, even as we call ourselves as devotees or practicing devotees, whatever, you know, but actually we don't even realize that things in this world can never get better. Because if there is so much sin being performed by every person in this world, what to talk of a metropolis like Bombay, Delhi and Calcutta, if there is so much of sin in this world, how can the world get better? Forget the global warming, forget the, you know, pollution, forget all that stuff. You know, it's like, you know, talking very, you know, high things, you know, global warming. Most of us don't even understand what that means. You know, temperature is increasing. But, you know, we don't know what it really means. You know, this is what's really happening. But we can see that the world can never be better. If this is the type of sinful activity, then there is going to be massive reaction. And all of us understand laws of Newton, laws of karma. For every action, there's a reaction. If there are so many people, millions and billions of people, just everyone just horribly sinful, then what can technology can be there in this world which can make the world anything better? What technology man can create? He just cannot create anything like that. He just has to suffer and suffer and suffer more. And all that we see as, you know, all you know, this sort of whatever we're seeing around as technology are all solutions to previous problems, is it not? Whatever technology we are seeing manifested so beautifully in this world in terms of all that we see in the city, so much of technology and all that. What is all this technology? It is all solutions to all the previous problems. And the technology itself now is a huge problem. So those huge problems of the you know, previous generation are solved in this manner. In fact, nature is so tricky that whatever problems are coming up now are becoming more and more insoluble. At least earlier, technology could solve them. See, now try to understand. The problems were there, and then the scientists knew, okay, we have some technology which we can solve this problem. Okay. Now, it has come to such a dead end practically, if you just see it for what it is without, you know, without this, you know, illusory energy covering us, that the problems, there are no technological solutions also to these problems now. There aren't. I mean, simple thing, you get infected by a bacteria. A bacteria infects your body. With all the brain of the best biologists and scientists in the world, the microbiologists are working day and night to create some antibiotic to kill that bacteria. But a small, tiny 4-micron bacteria is very small. It's 4-micron, 2-micron, very small organisms. But the big brain of a human being cannot invent a chemical to destroy it. We can destroy a tree or destroy a mountain. You take a dynamite, boom, you just blow it up. You think, we can destroy mountains. We can make a bomb which can destroy a city. Okay, you can destroy a city. Try to destroy a bacteria first. You can't even destroy a bacteria. Once it enters your body, it will kill you. It is designed by material energy to just kill you. So when these medical representatives comes to us as doctor, doctor, this antibiotic, that antibiotic, they tell us openly that doctor, please use antibiotics sparingly, because in the next 15 years there is not going to be another new antibiotic. It's not going to be an antibiotic. So use your antibiotics very judiciously. Use this one. Use my company's antibiotic, of course. Don't use that company one. Use this one, which I'm promoting. But anyway, they tell us that there is no more antibiotics coming. So it is so dangerous to be in this world, and technology will not come to our help. That's the whole point. So all these so-called guys who are telling about science, no. Because more and more infections, for example, and I can only talk biology because I'm from that field and I cannot talk about other field. Now more and more infections are coming from viruses. You may have maybe 40, 50 antibiotics, but there are hardly any drugs for viruses. You got a dengue virus. Dengue. You suffer. You heard of chikungunya virus? Chikungunya. It's a powerful virus. Chikungunya is that comes from an African word. Chikungunya is an African term. It started from there, I guess. But the body, chikungunya itself means that the body becomes so bent over that you can have to crawl like an animal to even move. You just go on fours. Everything is so painful. Everything just so bent. You just can't move. Agonizing pain. No response to painkillers. And that virus is very rampant in India. At Latur and in very much parts of Maharashtra and South India. It is not in the papers because, if they put in the papers, they'll be just everyone scared. The swine flu virus is nothing. It's just a hype. Swine flu virus is nothing, absolutely. It hardly caused 15 people to die. It's stupid. No power. But this has a power to cause massive suffering. Again, what's the treatment? So the point is that we need to understand when Bhaktivinoda Thakur sings that Diba Nishi Hiya Jwale, it's all fire all around you. The Holocaust, that word used in the translation, Holocaust. We don't really realize that actually we are in a Holocaust. We're just feeling so comfortable, but everything around is just getting bad and bad and worse. So, Prabhupada's purports sound often like very pessimistic purports. Look at this Prabhupada. Prabhupada must be given the first prize in the world, Nobel Prize, for being the best communicator. No mincing of words. Communication very clear. Communication skills, people talk about all the managers or communication skills and this and that. Look at Prabhupada. Every purport is like a perfection of communication skill. He can tell you very clearly, what does he say? We can make so many plans, biological plans, inventory plans, this plan, that plans, whatever, to live happily, but there cannot be any happiness in this material world. Clear? Now, even if you just know basic, KG class English, or any level of English, anyone can understand. There's no need of explanation whatsoever. It's very clear, very self-explanatory, axiomatic truth, Swayam Prakash statement, no purport required. It's very clear. However, we may try it for permanent settlement. So, this is what Prabhupada is saying. So it may appear like these guys, ISKCONites, are a bunch of complete pessimists. They always talk bad. They always talk doomsday. They always talk that's happening, this happening, that's happening. But actually, that's very important. We need to really get reminded all this time again and again. Otherwise, how we will feel like Gajendra? Again, I was thinking that if Krishna comes and chops off this crocodile, then I can really go back to my wife and say, here I am. And we can be together. But no. Huh? So to actually be in the mood of Gajendra, to feel like Gajendra, we will have to really believe and see with our open eyes that nothing good is going to happen. Nothing good. The sense sex may go up and down, that's another thing, you know. But nothing good is really going to happen. Just enough sense sex will go up to keep us attached to that illusion that money is coming. You know? Enough, just enough to keep people like that. And then again it will crash. Just enough technology to keep you, yeah, there is a solution there. That's enough of everything just to keep your hope on. That's all. Just enough will be provided to keep everything that is not so bad. It's not so bad, Prabhu. It's not so bad. It's everything. Just enough of that will be given to the human species by science. And of course, science means through Maya Devi. She'll just give you enough rope to feel that there is some hope here. But devotees don't believe this. But devotees don't believe this crap anymore. Through every page of Srimad Bhagavatam, Prabhupada is saying very loud and clear, Maya is all giving only false promises. So we want to come to that stage. Very soon, I guess, we should, very soon, I hope very soon, where we do not have to really go through Gajendra's sort of suffering. We will have to offer this prayer sometime. But we offer it, you know, in a routine way as life goes on and understand for the world as it is, or we will have to be caught by the crocodile of cancer or an accident or whatever else, where we will all have to say the same words, have the same words practically, not literally but practically, that Krishna, I don't want to live anymore. I just want to return back home, back to Godhead. I don't want to get another body now. Until we don't say these words, we will come back. We will all come back with all our chanting, all our Ekadashis and all our Nirjals and all our bathing in the Jamuna and all our jumping high in the sky for during Kirtan. With all that, we will all come back to the material world again. Those jumpings and those baths in Jamuna do not assure the ultimate perfection. They are purifying us gradually. The ultimate perfection where Krishna will take you in his arms will only come when we offer this intense. Because as I said, Krishna is an intense person. Unless he sees intensity, he will never come to pick you up or send Sunanda and Nanda to pick you up. You may go to some Janaloka and settle down there and higher planets and settle down. Okay, enjoy a little bit of. But not. So we have to. Gajendra, he is trying to break asunder all his bonds. We can feel, as you are reading this verse today, that there are chains binding Gajendra. And he is struggling to just break open those chains of ignorance. They are binding him in this elephant body. He is struggling to get rid, once and for all, of this thick layer of matter which is causing ignorance upon his soul. He is trying to break it and tear it and just go through that. And see the sky, spiritual sky. He's very intense. And hopefully when we are in our good senses, we can really come in front of Gopinath or in a yatra, at least once feel this utter desperation where we can all say together, I did not wish to live any longer after I am released from this attack of whatever our crocodile may be. What is the use of an elephant's body covered externally and internally by ignorance? I simply desire eternal liberation from the covering of ignorance. That covering is not destroyed by the influence of time. And Krishna will respond, and all his pastimes are designed for that. When it is in Vrindavan also, when thunderbolts are being showered, some of the most intense pastimes in Krishna book, I think the most intense probably is this, Indra, Govardhan Leela. It's very intense, very intense. You can imagine that, again, nothing casual. In Vrindavan, it's a very intense place. Again, it's a very intense place. Even now, today in the material world, when you go to Vrindavan, it's a very intense place. So Vrindavan continues to be intense, whether it's 5,000 years later or even now at that time. It's a very intense place. So unless you're an intense devotee, you cannot stay there too long. So we can see Indra is showering his thunderbolts. Now each thunderbolt is designed to make a mountain into powder. Thunderbolt is so powerful, you can make, and there's just one, not one thunderbolt and finished. No. It's just hundreds of thousands of thunderbolts flying on the head of Govardhan. And the amount of rain, the amount of rain which we had on that, what was that, July, 26 July or something, that rain was there. Now that rain is not no rain at all. It's like, you know, it's like a drought. It's no rain practically. It's just a little bit of, you know, 3 feet water or 4 feet water, and Bombay was finished. But this rain, imagine, I was thinking yesterday, these rains are designed for covering up half the universe. The water content of those clouds, like a cloud has water content, right? Like the cloud, huge cloud, it has got, you know, maybe a million gallon, whatever it has got. So that cloud content has got enough water to cover up half the universe when there is partial prolay taking place. And that water content is being showered on one district of Mathura. And it is not just, you know, again, very intense thing. Indra is telling these fellows, pour more, come on. He's pretty lashing Samvartaka with his whip. He said, come on, pour more. And all that is falling on a small village of Vrindavan. Can you imagine? No videographer or no movie actor can make a movie of like that type where he can show the amount of chaos, the amount of intense grief, chilling, biting cold, hailstorm, everything dark and everything is windy and everything is flying off. But again, the whole beauty of the beautiful part of this pastime is that they all knew where to go. Gajendra knew where to go. Draupadi knew where to go. As long as we know where to go, then we are safe. We don't go back to technology. We don't go back to our, you know, relatives or going back to our old ways. We only go to Uttara. Same thing. When the Brahmastra is being thrown at her by Aswatthama. She knew where to go. I can only go to Krishna. Krishna, Krishna, Mahabaho. So all these stories, they are all pointing in only in one direction. There is uniformity. There is diversity of these stories. But there is unity in all this diversity. They all are giving only one direction. They are giving us no hope of going anywhere else. Just only one. Go here. I'm sorry, not go here. Go here. Go to only one place. Go to only Gopinath. You know, earlier this ad was like, only Vimal. Only Vimal. You know, when you used to watch television before, you know, like, only Vimal. So yes, devotees, nobody else. You won't go to anybody else. However beautiful it may appear outside, you will not go to anybody else. You will only go. That is called as Nishtha. Krishna Ekasharanam. That's the first quality. The first quality of a devotee is Krishna Ekasharanam. That means all of the qualities are afterwards. Everything else comes afterwards. But the primary quality is that devotee is that he only accepts that of only one person. Because, you know, that is Achyuta Ashraya. Krishna is called as Achyuta Ashraya. He is himself Achyuta. So whatever does is Achyuta, but he is also Achyuta Ashraya. When you go to him, nobody has ever been disappointed. There is not one story where somebody has gone to Krishna and Krishna said, well, I'm too busy. He's always there for his devotees. Bhakta Vatsal Krishna. So let us try to, you know, grab the spirit before this chapter ends in the next 3 days, and, you know, again something new will come, and again we would have forgotten Gajendra, and some other nice pastimes will come from Bhagavatam. And of course we'll be happy hearing them also. But let us not lose this chance while it is all going on and it is right in front of us and the verses being spoken, we're reading every day. Let's sort of grab the spirit of Gajendra's mood of intensity and prayer. That is the only way we can purchase Krishna. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna. Any questions? Granthra, Srimad Bhagavatam. Oh, Hare Krishna. Sorry, there's a question. Please take the mic.
Hare Krishna. Prabhuji is saying we should have intensity like Gajendra if we want to purchase Krishna. And for that, he was in a very terrible situation. Whereas in our day-to-day life, we can never be in that situation. That how can we achieve that intensity?
But we can see around us, you know, with Krishna, like, you know, last 3 months in my life, in our life, common life, and we can see there are so many people have died whom we know. Gaurakapal Prabhu's father has left his body, my father left his body, and you know, so many people we know who lost their fathers, for example. Just in a very limited circle of devotee circle, we know that there are about 7 deaths among fathers, you know, in the last less than 3 months. So, and just recently we lost our dear friend, one of our dear friends, one of our fellow counselor Vaishnavas. So, you know, I was just discussing on the crematorium ground with our friends, and that he said this notice is coming practically so very frequently. Krishna is so kind that he never makes you forget. He never makes you forget that this is a terrible place. Every few days you're going to a crematorium, practically to attend somebody's funeral ceremony and some memorial service. So, you know, death is all around us. I'm sure you are, all of us are hearing, you know, somebody died of cancer, somebody died of heart attack, somebody died of accident. We are all hearing this all so often. But we have become so dull. We become so blunted. That nothing really shakes us up. So Krishna is saying something like a swine flu, you know, which, swine flu. So, you know, it's just some sort of excitement to create some excitement in the environment. I mean, Krishna must be getting bored, you know. So my people are not responding these days. So he sends a, you know, some fascinating new virus in which serial creates some uproar. And says, oh yeah, I can die. And everyone wearing a mask, you know. So, somebody sitting in the train and, you know, the trains are very crowded, everyone knows in Bombay. But during those times, last few months, if you sneeze, then the person will get up, you know. And give the seat to, because, you know, I have to be next to this person, I have to go other side. So it's easier to get a seat in the train, you just sneeze at somebody and the person gets up. If he has swine flu, I'll die. So people are so scared to death of somebody sneezing. Not of atom bombs anymore. You used to get scared of atom bombs or a chore or daku or somebody. Now if somebody sneezes in front of you, you are scared to death. Imagine the fear. It is a joke, no? If somebody says, yes, somebody sneezing there and he's sneezing. He's sneezing. It is very funny in one sense. When I was looking at it, as you know, from the medical point of view, wow, what's happening here? People are sneezing and people are getting scared. There's a massive phobia, a paranoia practically going on in the city of death. So anyway, the point is that we are being reminded every day practically about the dangers of our own existence. Don't people say nowadays when the terrorist attack was there that, you know, if a brother or somebody goes out to the college, if he comes back alive in the night, be happy. And weren't we all talking like this? But we've forgotten terrorism also, right? This last year it was there. But we've forgotten it practically. No one talks about it anymore. So Krishna has to create, he has to devise, in fact, newer leelas. Sometimes terrorism, sometimes swine flu, sometimes some, you know, rain flood, sometimes the tsunami. He himself has been thinking, Krishna, what next? What should I do next now to get these guys really to know that this is a bad world? So he is sending newer avenues till we don't really learn our lesson. He has to do that again and again. But Prabhupada says birth, old age, disease and death. Within that you have so much varieties of disease, that's all. The disease is there. So only if we learn our lesson, we'll have to just go through this again and again. So it's just that we are just dull people. Manda sumanda, the Kali Yuga is one of the symptoms. Manda sumanda matayo manda bhagya upadritaha. Manda means, if somebody says mentally challenged, MR, mentally retarded person. But we all are mentally retarded. The whole human race is mentally retarded. How many reminders we are getting, but we are not learning our lessons still. We are not becoming intense like Gajendra. Even after so many things going around us, what fools we can be. So, I mean, what to do? It's a pretty helpless situation. What can even Krishna do? You know, he's doing everything he can to pull us back. But we are so stubborn. We just stubbornly attached to sense gratification that we feel, no, it's not so bad. We'll take a mask, we'll protect ourselves, we'll figure out a vaccine for this, and we'll still live in this world. We try to really, there is some technological crunch given for every calamity. And everyone grabs that and said, there is still hope. You know, so let's not fall prey to this false propaganda. And be prepared to die today. Live our life as if we're prepared to die even today. If Krishna calls us today, we are ready. Hare Krishna. Bhagavatam ki jai. Hare Krishna.